Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to share our love for some of our favorite stories, and this season, we're exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're back in Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And she's wishing all of you good things on her name day. Happy birthday, cuz.
Thank you.
I'm Paul, and our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of it. We're excited to dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and learn about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we'll be discussing the sixth episode of House of the Dragon, The Princess and the Queen, which aired on HBO this past Sunday. So if you haven't seen it yet, go and watch it and come back after. We'll be discussing all the content of the show, some stuff from Game of Thrones, and we'll also be discussing the differences between the book and the show, but we will not be getting into future information from the books that inform the show.
And we will have adult content. So while Lenore Valerian's out there waggling his sword and winking at his sailors, we'll be breaking down his drunk history of postpartum lactation. What was wrong with this guy?
I don't understand. What a bizarre... Lenore,
I know.
We love you, but come on,
like,
dude.
You see the breasts, they get really full with milk. And he's giving the play-by-play. Like, I'm like, what's going on? She's like, can he get out of here? I want to talk to my husband. Let's go.
Good stuff. So let's talk about some of the important plot points from this episode. So we're more than 10 years after the last episode. Rhaenyra is welcoming a baby boy into the world, her third son, Joffrey Velaryon, and that Velaryon has air quotations around it. Oh, man. Queen Alicent immediately summons the baby to be brought to her so she can check if, like his elder brothers, he is actually the child of Rhaenyra and Sir Harwin Strong, the commander of the City Watch.
Real dick move. Sorry. Go ahead.
Continue. We will talk about Alicent, but yes, I was out on her immediately. In Pentos, Daemon has become a family man.
Woo!
Plot twist.
Oh, man.
He and Lena Velaryon have two daughters, Bela and Rhaena, and are expecting their third child. They are guests of a Pentashi prince who seeks their help and their dragons to face the Triarchy, which has now formed a new alliance with Dorne. In King's Landing, Sir Criston Cole this guy and Harwin Strong come to blows while training the young princes in the yard. And by princes, I mean both Alicent's children and Rhaenyra's. Because of Sir Strong's outburst, rumors start swirling all over the Red Keep about the paternity of Rhaenyra's children. Rhaenyra takes this opportunity to attempt to broker a peace between her and Alicent by offering a marriage between Jace, her eldest son, and Helena, Alicent's daughter, which would join the two lines of Viserys' house. She also offers a dragon egg to Prince Aemon, who doesn't yet have a dragon.
No, he doesn't. Interesting. So Lady Lena goes into labor, but the baby will not come. Daemon is given the same choice that Viserys was given with Aemma. He hesitates after learning that Lena would not survive the procedure, but by the time he looks around, Lena has taken things into her own hands, and she is like, nah, I choose dragon fire. I am dying a dragon lord's death. That's it. A dragon rider's death for me.
Mm-hmm.
After attempting to resign his position on the council, Lord Lionel Strong accompanies his son Harwin back to Harrenhal. There they are both murdered by a fire commissioned by Larys, their son and brother, who acted after Queen Alicent told him she did not have enough allies at court and really wished her father was still the hand. Rhaenyra, seeing that the situation is getting a little bit dicey at court, it's deteriorating, she decides to leave and head to Dragonstone, bringing her entire family.
And
let's take a moment.
And Lenore's
lover,
boyfriend.
Carl. She brought his lover, Carl. Let's take a moment. Even though they were here far too short a time, and pour one out for Lionel Strong, Harwin Strong, and Lena Falarian.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
For my blood liquor! Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
We had you for too little time.
Too little time.
But you gave us some awesome kids in the meantime.
Yeah, more. Let's talk about the kids, because we got some new things on the board, some new people, new dragons. We got a lot to unpack here. Why don't we start with going through each of the kids? So let's start with Alicent and Viserys' kids.
Okay, so we've met Prince Aegon before. This guy with his punchable face. I don't want to dislike Aegon at this point, but let's just talk about his bizarre behavior. Like, what is going on here?
I mean, as he said about his brother, he's a twat. He's totally fucking terrible. Oh my God. He's not, I mean, like, at this point, he's kind of like still malleable. He's a little bit got some weird anger issues, a little bit hypersexual. That's another way to say I jerk off out the window. That's what I do.
Yeah, how I get down. I have no problem with him masturbating, but dude, do not expose the poor people of King's Landing. Like, what do you...
Can you imagine walking underneath the window at the Red Keep and something hits your head and you think it's a bird, but it's just Aegon being Aegon?
I had not thought about that. Gross. Oh, my God.
Oh, Aegon. Oh, that's just Aegon again, being Aegon. Oh, man. This guy is wild. So who else we got? What other kids we got? Because we're going to talk more about that scene for sure.
We have Helena, his little sister, who we've also met before, but she was a baby. Mm-hmm. Helena is interesting. She's different. I think there's some neurodivergence going on here. Mm-hmm. I do think that the only scene where I wasn't actively angry at Alicent was when she was talking to her and, you know, trying to connect to her through this fascination she has with these bugs.
Still felt condescending to me a little bit.
Helena has long been one of Alicent's children that I've always really liked.
Yeah,
she's
me too.
Just genuinely like a sweet young girl. So I hope they keep to that. And then we have Prince Aemond.
Sir Oink.
He's a little wimpy, but he's also being bullied by all the other boys at court. I do have to say, more power to him for his determination to get a dragon. He really, really wants that dragon.
And he almost got burned for it.
He almost got lit up. And I got to say, if only his father had that same determination.
If only he's out here making love matches and figuring things out. Claim a fucking dragon. That's all I'm gonna keep saying. That's we're beating that drum.
And then there's one more kid who we haven't seen of Alicent and Viserys, but I think we should mention him because I have read that he will be casted. This is Prince Daeron, who is the youngest boy. So he did not appear in this episode, but he will be a character in the show.
Yeah, and I think all these kids have been aged up a little bit, which is probably good. They were a little too young for some of the things that we're talking about early in the chapters in the book. And so then we also have Rhaenyra and Lenor's kids. So we have Jace or Jacerys Velaryon. Mm-hmm. He's a dragon rider. He's very, very inquisitive, notices everything. He's probably about 9 and already starting to piece things together about what's going on and what's being said. That's really consistent with what's written in the text. Lucerys Velaryon, also a dragon rider. They call him Luke. And yeah, so this is And then we have Joffrey, who was just born. So Joffrey just now is born, and he's a baby, little tiny baby, who was, you know, came out the womb being judged by the queen. Kind of wild.
And then over in Pentos, we have the children of Daemon and Laena. Baela Targaryen, named for her grandfather. Mm-hmm. And Rhaena Targaryen, named for her grandmother on her mother's side. And Baela is a dragon rider. We have not met her dragon yet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Rhaena hasn't gotten that dragon yet. Her egg never hatched, as we saw in the episode.
She's putting it on the fire, though, and it's her mom. What a touching scene. I can't wait to talk about that. Yeah, that
was so sweet. I just, like, really felt for both Aemon and Rhaena, because they're both, like, you know, they're outsiders in this family of extraordinary people. So another reminder of the movie Encanto, you know, the main character doesn't have any powers. Anyway, so I thought that was really, really sweet to see her and her mother bond over it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was really touched by that scene, and it really made you think, like, it just showed you the care between a mother and a daughter. And I thought similarly in, like, what you're referencing about the scene with Helena and Allison, although I kind of felt, maybe it's just I'm seeing it through a certain lens, but I kind of felt like Allison's was more like, I'm going to be here because I want to, like almost, I don't know, I felt a little bit condescension in it, like, you know what I mean? But maybe it's just because she flipped on Aemon like 2 seconds later. But
I first thought that too when the first watch, but on my second watch, I do think she's genuinely trying to connect to her daughter, who she doesn't fully understand. Because even though she's like sort of feigning interest, first of all, that's parenting, right? Like, sometimes you just don't want to hear the story. But she is asking her questions. Why do you think that? You know, say more about that. So that's I think it's genuine. And Allison is a fierce mom. I think that's, you know, like Cersei, she loves her children.
Yeah. I really love the it's beyond comprehension, like, answer that she gives to her about, like, hey, we don't know. We can't know why this is the way it is. And then consequently, also, I really love seeing Rhaena and Laena have the conversation where Lena's encouraging her that everybody doesn't just get a dragon right away and to start riding a dragon. Like, if you want it, you have to claim it. Encouraging her to be, you know, fierce in her determination and not to give up. It's a real contrast to, like, the messaging Aemon's getting right now. She's saying he's going to get a dragon, but she's like, it's different because I think it's in their blood, right? Like, it's part of who Laena is as a Valyrian, that you know, and from Valyria, that they understand this whole, you have to go after what you want with the dragons, you know?
Yeah, so like, cool. The way the book describes Laena is that she was is adventurous. She had her mother's beauty and her father's, like, adventurous spirit. Now, I take small issue with that because Rhaenys was also adventurous and a noted dragon rider. But yeah, the way that her father and her brother really gravitate towards, like, adventuring on the sea, she is all about the adventures in the sky. And so I actually liked the way that, you know, she goes out in this episode, just because it's her stated, that's what she wanted. That's what she told us, right? I want to die like a dragon rider.
Even though they changed the format in which it happens, from the book, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the episode, but I do think it's still true to who she is as a person and in her character, right?
Totally.
So
agree.
I really want to start off here talking a little bit more, let's set the board a little bit more about what dragons now we have on the board, because we've talked about the dragon rollout. So I think, you know, so far we've seen Vermax in the dragon pit. Right.
Mm-hmm. And that he is super cute. I mean, he did. I felt bad for the goat, but
yeah, RIP to the goat. Yeah, for sure.
But super cute.
OK, so that's Jace's dragon. And then we got Vhagar. Right. And that is Laena's dragon. But Vhagar is also a dragon that we've spoken about before on previous episodes. Vhagar was one of the dragons that was born during the time of Aegon the Conqueror on Dragonstone, and in one of the clutches of eggs that were hatched on Dragonstone, and was the dragon of Visenya Targaryen. So we've talked about Vhagar, and also you'll reference that Lena, when she was, you know, walking through the courtyard with the king, brought up Vhagar, and so we can now see that she went and claimed Vhagar after wondering where she was. She's a female dragon and is the oldest and biggest dragon in Westeros. So we have another dragon that's in the dragon pit with Aemon, when Aemon sneaks down after getting the pig. Who do you think it is?
I think it's Dreamfire. I couldn't get a great look, and it's dark, right? But I think it's Dreamfire. I don't think it's Syrax, which is the other... Like, we know that Dreamfire and Syrax are both she-dragons that are in the pit. I think it's Dreamfire. And I've seen a couple of sources that say they also, you know, other people who think that this was Dreamfire.
Yeah, I think it's Dreamfire. My reasoning behind it is that right after we see the dragon and Aemon falls on his back and runs out of the dragon pit, we go directly to Helaena. Like, as the next person that we see is her. And when he's brought into the room, she says he did it again. He did it again. Right. So like, it's almost as if like that she's connected to that dragon. So that was she's bonded to that dragon. So that was kind of my feeling and my sense that it could be Dreamfire. What do you think about these rules about how a dragon is bonded to you? That's one of the things I've been thinking about a little bit.
Yeah. I thought that this was a good piece of, information for us, that once the dragon is fully bonded to you, they will refuse to take instruction from other riders, which I think is important. I think they're telling us that to set up the conflict to come. I mean, I think we kind of knew that, but it wasn't fully stated, right? I think that one of the problems that Daenerys Targaryen had was that she didn't have these Valerian dragon keepers who kind of keep the dragons in line and teach you how to train them and teach you how to bond with them. And so it wasn't really clear like why her dragons were bonded to her, or and she was the only one. They kind of just leaned on, oh, she's a Targaryen and they're dragons. But I like the fact that they're showing us that actually the dragons need to be trained. You just don't hop on their back and go flying. Like, they actually need to bond with you and accept you as their rider and learn learn how to do things, the various commands, which I think the only one we ever really heard from Daenerys was Dracarys.
Yeah, and we saw some new ones in the dragon pit, which was really cool. I was appreciative of seeing this, like learning different commands, getting them to do the things you want them to do. And even when Jace was a little concerned, he still spoke the commands, which was smart. And one dragon we don't see on screen but is made reference to is Sunfire. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was cool because they in the book anyway, they say that Sunfire was the most beautiful dragon that anyone has ever laid eyes on. So I'm interested in seeing how they unveil what Sunfire looks like. From a color standpoint, from everything, it's like supposedly Sunfire is amazingly beautiful.
I also just want to say, since we're talking about the appearance, like Vhagar looked amazing.
Yeah.
And to see Vhagar flying next to Caraxes, which I think is the biggest dragon we've seen so far, was awesome, because we just got a sense of the scale of Vhagar and also of her age. I mean, you mentioned this, but she's so old. She's the oldest dragon and the largest. So that was pretty dope. I thought they did a pretty good job with how Vhagar looked.
Yeah. And it's no small feat. I mean, you have to think about, even with the blood of Valyria in you and all that other stuff, you have to think about the fact that Vhagar was out in the wild. Like, let's talk about, like, Lena and her badassery, that she was like, yeah, I'm going to go claim this dragon who can't really fit that great in the dragon pit, hasn't been in Dragonstone in forever, and is out in the wild. Let me find this dragon and bond to this dragon at 15. So shows you, and you see like in her writing in the scene that she's no joke and neither is Damon. Like it's a pretty awesome scene to watch them fly together, you know? So
yeah, it's very, very cool. I do have a quibble with the scene. Damon flies directly into Vhagar's flame, which kind of tracks with this notion that Targaryens are fire resistant.
Yeah.
Cool. No problem. I was like, okay, no problem. That I actually saw that scene and was like, confirmed they are fireproof. Like you can't burn a dragon, right? And then later in the episode, she Dracarys's herself. So I was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, is it that she's not a full Targaryen? Is that
what I wonder if that's what they're going for here, because I, you know, her parents are not siblings, so she's not a full Targaryen, and Daemon's parents were siblings, so I don't know, but I just was like, can you guys make up your minds about are these Targaryens fireproof like Daenerys, or was Daenerys special in some way?
I also think, though, that there's like, I mean, maybe it's just that the fireball was like in the air and it started to dissipate and he just flew through it like it was already dissipating.
Yeah, it could be just that he got through it really quickly, but it was a lot of fire. I was kind of stunned at how much it was. And then the other thing, too, is like Viserys, Daenerys Targaryen's brother, was not fireproof. And we know that. So
he was not the true blood of the dragon.
It's true. I mean, she said so. A dragon does not burn.
Anyway, shouts to Daenerys. So we know now there's like these different factions happening, which is what we're going to be digging into the rest of this way. So let's really talk about Allison and her allies and their offensive, really, like to me in this episode. And it really kicks off at the start with her summoning Rhaenyra to come and to see, to show the baby, and then acting as if Rhaenyra wasn't going to come with her brand new baby. She's delivered babies herself. She knows the bond that you have with your child after carrying them that long. To summon this woman's child means to summon her. And I was mortified by what I saw in the coarseness and the meanness in like this level of like anger that you're seeing already in Allison.
Yeah, I know Allison's priority here was to make a point about how the baby looked, right? Okay, you can also come to the child. Like this baby is literally minutes old. Has been in the, to the point where the baby is still connected to its mother. They haven't cut the cord yet. And she's already demanding an audience with a minutes old child. It's crazy. I mean, and then when Rhaenyra appears, Allison does this, oh no, Rhaenyra, you should be abed.
You should be resting after your labors. Oh, really? I know. I know I should, but you did ask for me to come.
Allison did this twice in the episode where she said something, put something into the world, and then acted shocked when it turned out the way that most people would predict it would turn out.
Yeah, I was really, really irritated with that aspect of it, because she does this again with Larys later in the episode where after Larys kills his dad and his brother, because she's saying she has no allies and she has nobody at court and her father would choose differently. And you see him kind of lean in and take in her words and understand exactly what she's saying. She acts as if, oh yeah, no, that's not what I was asking for. I wasn't asking for that. Because to me, Allison has this surface level of piety and decency she wants to project to the world. But underneath, there is the reality of what she really harbors, which started with anxiety and fear can most times turn into anger, resentment, jealousy, and that's where it is right now, is that she's in this vengeful place that she can't find her way out of.
Yeah, it's Allison. So let me just say, if you came to this podcast because you wanted to hear someone talk about, you know, understanding Allison's point of view, you need to find another podcast. I'm not that person. I'm not doing it. Allison was absurd in this episode. She was completely unhinged. And what did we watch Rhaenyra do? Just kind of try to survive. Like, she's just trying to get by here. Yes, her children are not the children of her husband. Gee, well, her parents, meaning her father and Allison, arranged for her to marry someone who is gay. He doesn't like women.
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't want to be with a woman. And so she's supposed to just like live this life with someone who doesn't really want to be with her and like essentially breed. Like, what? It's absurd. So
I mean, you know, he doesn't want to have sex with her at all. Like, he's not going to like, he's not. I don't get the sense that Lenore is like, okay, let's have this kid that everyone will say is our kid in the realm. I get the sense that they, again, in the previous episode, struck a deal to do their duty, but that didn't necessarily mean to have a biological child together. It meant to be a symbol for the realm. And I think that they're both trying to navigate that, and they've made that peace with that. And why are you in someone's bedroom? Like, you don't know the... Like, so they've committed to each other as husband and wife, and they've had a discussion amongst each other of how that's going to go. That's for them to decide. Like, why are you out here being the morality police? And to be completely honest, your Kingsguard, if he wasn't a bitch boy, would be the one who would be fathering the children.
Yeah, totally. Allison just seemed completely unhinged to me. And because I can't relate to her in any way in this regard, like, I have a really hard time believing that she would feel so strongly about all of it. Here's what I do understand. Of course, she sees Rhaenyra as an adversary. And she wants to undermine Rhaenyra because she's concerned about her children and their place in this realm. I get that. And I totally also understand her weaponizing the birth of the children, like, in the fact that they're, you know, I hate this word, but like, illegitimate children against Rhaenyra. I get that part. That's kind of just playing the Game of Thrones. What I don't understand from Allison is the cruelty. I don't get that part. Like, I don't understand why she is so hell-bent on making Rhaenyra miserable and seeing herself as a victim when she is in charge. I just don't get that part. I don't understand her being so vindictive when, okay, let's accept her narrative that Rhaenyra lied to her. All right, it's been 10 years. Get over it. You guys are not friends.
Yes. I mean, obviously, this is the problem, right? Like, you see Sir Crispy at the door, princess. I was like, listen, this could have been us, but you're playing. Like, this could have been us. Like, this could have been a whole situation. And she's unbothered. She's not even caring about this situation. And I think that Allison, Sir Crispy, all of these folks are just like, they're stuck in a moment. And Rhaenyra's trying to get on with it and get on the business of doing what they say they want to do, which is represent the realm. She's like, how do we take care of this and deal with this the best way possible? And I see the other faction instilling, in small ways and big, hatred, fear into children that didn't have any stake in what happened before. Rather than fostering togetherness, family, let's rule this thing till the end, there's like this idea that it, like, you know, the scene where she plants seeds into Aegon and plants seeds as he's trying to get rid of some. I mean, she walks in, right, talking about, I have to. So Kristen, first of all, is like going off about Rhaenyra, right? He's just going off. I mean, he gets into a tangent. You know how somebody just like been waiting to talk shit? He's all, the Princess Rhaenyra, acting brand new. The Princess Rhaenyra, like you don't know who she is. The Princess Rhaenyra is brazen and relentless spider who stings and sucks her prey dry. You wish. You wish she was sucking anything from you, dude. Like anything. Like that's not happening, okay? None of that is happening. She went for the strong man. And the point is that I just don't understand how she's hung up on this idea. Again, she's in of decency and trying to say like decency will prevail because she's fully engaged in this treasonous conversation until she has to put up the veneer of like, oh, wait, like you can't say that because if I agree with that, you're going to look at me as being less pious. That's all fake. That's totally phony. And then she walks in on her son masturbating.
Yeah, I know. She does her little thing about decency prevailing and her son is literally exposing himself to the entire realm.
And it would be, that would be bad within itself. But also, this just shows you even more how terrible Allison's boundaries are. She's all in people's marriages. She's standing in the back of her son who's butt-ass naked. Didn't knock at all. As he's masturbating, and then he jumps down to cover himself up, and she goes into a full-on treasonous conversation and grabs him by the face and tells him he's gonna be the king. So mom, thanks. I was trying to masturbate. This is like, I'm gonna always think of mutiny when I masturbate now. Thanks, I appreciate that.
It's crazy. I did like that Aegon was kind of like, I don't care, you know? Like,
I don't care.
Like, I'm a teenager. When she's like, Rhaenyra will be queen, he's like, so?
He's like, mom, get out of my room. I'm trying to move one out. I don't give a fuck about this right now. You're fucking up my vibe. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's just terrible. Like, I don't, what is the big deal? Like, okay, so she'll be the queen. Like, I will still be a prince. Like, what is the issue? And then the other thing that I have a real issue with Allison is the way that she is out here. Okay. I don't want to. We know those kids are Harwin Strongs.
Yes.
We're fully aware.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't have any actual proof except for the fact that the kids don't look like Lenore or Rhaenyra. And her kids don't look like her. So I'm like, okay. And she's running around the entire, like every time she talks about this, it's out in the open. She's talking about it to Viserys in front of, you know, Eddard, who is this guy who's helping him with his little Lego set. Like she's not even trying to conceal this. She's intentionally trying to get this rumor bandied around court. And The part that really got to me was when Viserys turned to her and said, we are family.
Yeah.
Like, we are still a family. Like, what on earth are you doing? Like,
let's put this childishness behind us. What are we doing?
It's really crazy. And she just, like, doesn't. She seems so immature compared to Rhaenyra, who has matured a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and she goes as far as to tell the king, who she has no real position other than queen. She's queen consort, sure, but he's like literally in the line of succession was the king, and Rhaenyra's also in the line of succession. She tells the king, yeah, you'll be able to do what you want over my dead body. And she's really lucky that he's not Henry VIII. Like that would have been a totally different conversation if in real world, this was Henry VIII she was talking to. Could have ended differently for you, Allison. So I just didn't get how she felt the audacity to say that. And I think it shows how weak Viserys has gotten.
Yeah, really. I just want to say this last thing about Allison and the way that she behaved in this episode. She tells both Ser Crispy and she says to Larys that she doesn't have any allies. Nobody in Westeros is for her.
Oh, God.
When she ends a small council meeting, everybody starts to get up. She, like, people listen when you walk into a room. You're not. Yeah. The princess just gave birth and dragged her ass out of bed to bring you the baby because you asked. You are in a position of power. You are not the aggrieved party here.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, Allison, rant over. I feel good.
Yeah, getting it out of my system. We could go on and on, but I do think like it is important to talk a little bit about some of these other things that are happening, because we'll go back into some of the things that have to do with Allison's limited wardrobe and other things that go with that. She's always got a green dress. It's just it, huh? Just green dressed it out. So Rhaenyra's grown, as you said. She's you know, gone as the person who's totally carefree teenager, just out here for a good time. It seems like the 10 years have improved the relationship with her and Viserys. It doesn't even seem like she's hostile towards Kristen or Allison, even after everything that happened. I did notice in the scene where they're leaving the Queen's chamber that, you know, there's like a trail of blood the hallway.
I know.
And it's like kind of like wild to see that, like, the trail of blood that is in the hallway when Laenor looks back at Kristen and with the baby. I don't know, man. To me, I felt like it was obviously what was happening in the scene, but there was a little bit of an undercurrent to me of that, of like, there is this like real, like, bloody path that these folks are pushing the family towards. And I feel like she's trying to avoid it at every turn, but they're forcing her hand, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, when I saw that trail of blood, I gasped. And then the fact that Kristen has no reaction to it, he couldn't care less, just shows how little feeling he has for her, like, he can go from wanting to marry this woman to not even caring that she's bleeding on the, like, leaving a trail of blood in the castle. Like, he has no reaction to it. Like, Laenor, so look back at him and imagine being Laenor. This guy killed your lover, someone who's very important to you, and apparently nothing happened.
Does this not give you Varric vibes? Like, I feel like this is Varric 2.0 vibes.
I was like, why Varric from the Legend of Korra? I was like, why isn't he in jail?
Why isn't he in jail? Like, what, this fucking guy is just out here living his best life. He's not in jail. Like, after killing somebody and making their face mush. Like, that's it. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I think Rhaenyra's growing up. I do think that, you know, I think that there were some real key conversations here that really, between her and Laenor, that really, I don't know. I thought that they were mature conversations, right? I thought that they mostly have a warm relationship. Obviously, there was some tension there when he was talking about leaving her and the kids, right? In the Red Keep. And I thought that it was interesting what he says, right? He says, you know, like, in this whole, I want to go off to war. And she's like, we're in a tough spot, dude. Like, you can't go. I'm commanding you to stay. But before that, he says, you know, a wise sailor flees the storm as it gathers. And this has to give you reference, and I mean, it does to us, to elude a storm, you can either sail into it or around it, but you must never await its coming, that his dad said when he was talking to Viserys.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, the very similar kind of, like, words here that they're using.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that he also used the storm analogy, because it was sort of like they're both talking about getting away from the storm, but Corlys's approach is very different, which is to face the storm dead on, or to go around it. And I think that Laenor is not wrong here. I do think that it makes sense for them to get out of Dodge. Like, this situation is becoming so unpleasant, and it's affecting the kids too. So I just think that it makes sense for them to go, which is, you know, ultimately after Rhaenyra is quite rude to him and commands him to stay, she agrees. Yeah. Like, it's time to go to Dragonstone. He still has to stay. She still needs the protection of her husband, right? The keep up this notion of, like, this marriage is real. But she can't tolerate the conditions at court anymore.
I honestly thought that that conversation, although heated, was an insight into like where they both were. Like Lenore has been numbing himself since what happened on the wedding night, mm-hmm. right? Like he's been, I'm gonna indulge in all, I'm gonna get new horses, I'm gonna drink, I'm gonna like, you know, mess with all the boys I like at court. This is what it is. I'm just doing that, right? And I thought Rhaenyra really spoke to, I didn't begrudge you any of that. Like that was our agreement. That's what we said was gonna happen, but I still need you to like uphold the one part of what we are supposed to do together, which is like navigate these treacherous waters. And I thought that's where she gets to the point of like, I have no choice. Because if you're really not seeing how terrible this is, I have to tell you, you can't go, you know? And, you know, I think he understands it, especially there's that moment. He didn't like it, but I think he understood. There was a moment at the end when, you know, she says, hey, you know, Carl can come, that I thought was really another nod to this is not, you know, it's a marriage of convenience. This is not a real marriage, but they're cousins and they love each other. I think there is a love there between the two of them, but on a friendship level. And I think we lose some of that and some of the things they've taken out of the story, which, you know, I guess we're going to get to here in a minute, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. So this clip of Rhaenyra walking to Alicent with Lenore from the first 10 minutes of the episode, mm-hmm. you know, the HBO had released it early, which I think was very smart because it allowed mm-hmm. us, those of us who watched it, to kind of get used to Emma Darcy's portrayal of Rhaenyra. And it's mm-hmm. a very, like, it's a great shot. Like, it's just on Rhaenyra for the whole time. Like, she mm-hmm. is center stage of this moment where Alicent is asking for the baby. But I immediately felt endeared to Lenore because he knows that's not his baby. Mm-hmm. He's very aware, but that doesn't mean that he treats Rhaenyra or the child with any less care and affection. Yes, the stuff he's saying to her is silly, right? Yeah. I was once lanced in the shoulder. I'm glad I'm not a woman. Like, yes, those things are not the things that she wants to hear in that moment. But he goes on this walk, this treacherous walk with her. As soon as they get into the chambers, he says to the king, okay, basically, you've seen the baby. My wife needs to rest now.
Mm-hmm.
He is an ally to her. Like, he really is trying to support her. And I think there is real love between them. It's obviously not romantic love, but their relationship sort of warmed my heart. Yes, there is conflict. Yes, Rhaenyra gets frustrated with him multiple times in the episode, but I think they both care about each other.
Yeah, if you had to put on this kind of front for everybody, you would be frustrated. Like, with not the person, it would spill out over to the person sometimes on both sides, but it's because they have to put on this whole like thing that's like all about power and succession and politicking and moves them further and further away from their connection and relationship. Which I think is, you know, I don't know. I think like it shows you what it's doing to all these people. They're all the Game of Thrones, as they call it, it's changing all these people in a way that they wouldn't be otherwise, you know? Yeah, I think like one of the relationships I really feel that hasn't been highlighted so much, circles around the Valyrians and the Targaryens when it comes to Rhaenyra and Lena. Like, there, this like foursome of Lenore, Daemon, Lena, Rhaenyra, they actually are close in the books. Like, there's mm-hmm. actually like a connection between all four of them. Obviously, Lenore and Daemon from fighting in the wars in the Stepstones, and then Rhaena, Lenore, and Lena from just growing up together as cousins. There's a lot of, I mean, they're all related, but there's a lot of like love in this relationship between the two of them. And I thought that's missing in a lot of this, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, Lenore and Rhaenyra's relationship is a little bit more of a black hole. Like, Lenore doesn't actually spend that much time at court.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to get on okay, but they're not like very, very close in the book. But Lena and Rhaenyra are very close, to the point where Rhaenyra is present at the birth mm-hmm. when Lena goes into labor. She and Daemon are both there. And I wish we hadn't lost that. It's not just something that we lost in the time jump. It's something that they wrote out of the story, essentially. Because like yeah. when the Joffrey's birth is announced to Daemon and Lena, it's a letter from Lenor. It's not a letter mm-hmm. from Rhaenyra writing to her, what the book calls her good sister. So mm-hmm. I'm sad about that, because I think that this show set up a new relationship between women that wasn't in the book, which is Alicent and Rhaenyra. I always love to see, relationships between girls and women, friendships portrayed on screen. You don't always get that. And I think fantasy is a place where it often gets removed. You often have a woman protagonist or a girl protagonist in a fantasy story who has no girlfriends. Like, all of her friends mm-hmm. are boys. And I'm sad that we lost this, because I was actually kind of looking forward to having Lena and Rhaenyra have more screen time together, because yeah. they were in the book. They're like, basically, it says that she had no love for her stepmother, Alicent, but she did have love for her sister-in-law, good Lena. Sister.
Yeah. Yeah. What were your thoughts about the small council scene?
Lord Beesbury is having a hard time, huh? The years have not been good to Viserys physically, because, Viserys lost his arm. I don't think we've noted that. Like, yeah, they obviously couldn't contain the rot, and he lost his arm. And he's just aged, like, everyone aged a decade. Viserys aged, like, 50 years. Like, he just looks, crazy. Really terrible. But his mind is still intact. In fact, I would say Viserys is even becoming a little bit more sharp in some ways. Lord Beesbury, opposite, he doesn't look so bad, but he is having a real hard time. I couldn't figure out if he can't hear well or if there's something cognitive going on. What did you think?
Well, if you ask him, the Blackwoods have the upper hand in the conflict, even though we're talking about something totally different.
We've moved on to the stepstone, sir.
Yeah. He pulled the whole, like, can you go back a slide, please? Can you just go back a slide? Like, I'd like to talk about the Blackwoods. Oh man, that is fucking that is wild. But it's wild to see how much he's aged, and we got some new people in the council room. I mean, obviously there's Alicent, who's joined here, but we also got Maester Orwell, who is now sitting inside of the room.
Yeah. And I thought this discussion between Allison and Rhaenyra was interesting. It's sort of like mm-hmm. like ping pong. They're like going back and forth with each other, sparring politically, right? In a way that really revealed a lot about both Allison and Rhaenyra. Allison is very much like Viserys. She's out here. Well, that issue in the Riverlands is a Tully problem. You know, we're not going to get involved. And then when it comes to the Stepstones, she's basically like, you know, Daemon abandoned it, whatever. And when Rhaenyra pushes back on both issues, she pushes back on the issue of the Riverlands, because she's like, actually, we should look into this conflict, because you know that these people will fight over anything, the Blackwoods and the Brackens, which she knows from personal experience.
She has firsthand experience. Like, she literally just saw somebody go gut another person. Like, a little kid was like, no, fuck that. I'm about that action. Let's go.
Yeah, she saw like a 12-year-old boy stick a knife into one of the Brackens over nonsense, over trash
talk.
Sis
is still DMing her about, yo, you remember when, like, that dude was like, she's like, ooh. She's still out here.
And then when it comes to the Stepstones, Rhaenyra is also like, we could have done something, right? Like, Daemon came back and was like, yeah, I left it. I won. I'm the king of the Narrow Sea now. But also, like, I left it totally unprotected. Your move, Viserys. And 10 years later, Viserys is like, oh, I don't want to deal with the Stepstones. And Allison's response is like, oh, well, we don't have money for that. And, you know, we don't have unlimited funds, which kind of makes me think of like, well, you guys still like to probably have tourneys and balls and stuff. Like, okay, yeah, you don't have limited funds, but you could have done something. I mean, even just have Rhaenyra fly Cyrax by every so often and burn shit up. Like, do something.
Yeah. Also, your man's over there, Sir Crispy, pummeled somebody from House Velaryon and they got the most coin in the realm. If you would have been nice to the rich people, they might have given y'all, they maybe would have floated y'all something, little something. But you up here smashing people's faces and trying to prove that their son is a freaking cuckold. Like, what are you doing? Like, why don't you go ask them for some money?
Yeah, I just don't. It was like a very interesting way to watch how Alicent governs and maybe would prepare Aegon to govern. Ugh. And how Rhaenyra has decided that she would like to govern, which is to be a more involved monarch. So I think they're setting up something interesting. Knowing what we know about the story, I'm just going to leave it at that. But I think that this back and forth, this was a short scene, but it was a very interesting one. And I think that the fact that Rhaenyra, after they politically spar, then says, I want to acknowledge that I have, you know, that my family and your family are not getting along, which I thought was like, gave me chills. This is,
yeah.
Allison's children are Rhaenyra's siblings.
Yeah.
And the divide is already there. And it's even set up in the scene, right? Like when Rhaenyra speaks and she says, I have something to say, Viserys tells everyone to sit down and Allison does not sit down. And then Viserys is between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And Rhaenyra does this thing that I think must have been very, very difficult for her, which is to say, there's conflict and I'm sorry about the conflict. And I know that the conflict, I'm the party in this conflict that's weaker. And so I'm going to offer two things, that Helaena would be the queen consort because Jace is my heir. And Aemon, who has been bullied, that my sons took part in bullying, can pick from one of my dragon's clutches of eggs. Mm-hmm. And Allison can't even soften at that. I mean, Rhaenyra even references their previous friendship and she's like, yeah, mm-hmm. Whatevs.
Yeah, that was the one that was toughest. She said, and far before any of these things, we were also friends. And I thought that was a real olive branch of like, because let's remember that in the books, we know what happened in the 10 years like preceding. But last we saw them, it was at her wedding feast. And I don't think Rhaenyra was so up on like why Allison was so pissed off at her all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And cold.
Mm-hmm.
She never really got the like, they never had a convo where it was like, you know what, Rhaenyra, I'm upset that da 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 da, and then they went back and forth and they let it sit where it is. It just has festered for this long from what they've showed us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of just feel like that's a very good call out that you're making about their style of governance. I also felt like, you know, it was interesting too, the subtext that made her, I think Rhaenyra saw that what she was saying and the conversation they were having could have been read a different way too, because I think that there was some undercurrent of like, you know, we let it fester and now it's reared its ugly head again. And I think that through an action, like I'm paraphrasing, but like through an action, like we let this thing fester and now it's rearing its head again. In the conversation, you're seeing Viserys kind of like you said in the ping pong, and that could easily be said of their own relationship. This idea of like, hey, you know, like this shit was dead, thought we're past this, there's a problem, but now here we go again with resentments and enmities coming up. Like, what's the deal?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I thought rightfully she extended the olive branch.
Yeah. And I know, I think we should acknowledge that Rhaenyra is in a state of, she knows she has a weaker hand here. So she's asking Allison to mend fences because she's forced to, basically. Like, she has to she knows she has to do something, or things at court in her position and the fact that she's heir could all be in jeopardy. And I have no problem with Allison rejecting it. The reason she rejected it, you know, what a mean girl response. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to marry my only daughter to her plain featured children.
Yeah, she had to stop because she wanted to call them bastards, but then she was like, her plain, like she went to, and yeah, that was wild.
Yeah,
that
was really messy. It's also silly because I was like, girl, you're plain featured. I've seen Hobart. I've seen Otto. Your family isn't extraordinary. Y'all got
plain features. Yeah, and also her children in comparison to the strong boys. Like, are you serious? Like, Aemond and they're way cuter than freaking Aemond and Aegon. Are you kidding me? Get out of here.
True that. We're not doing that. True that.
We're not doing that with you. And here's the thing that really... It showed two things. Allison was very upset because of the council and the hand kind of agreeing with Rhaenyra. But let's not forget, Lionel Strong was on the council as the master of laws when Rhaenyra was the cupbearer. Rhaenyra has spent majority of her time inside the small council room learning how to rule, learning different things. Allison just got there a hot second ago. You know what I mean? So, of course, there's going to be some level of acumen that she has. And what pissed me off the most is I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not a woman, but I can think to this as being a person of color. When you're in a situation where it's already difficult, I'm assuming, in the realm to have a woman sit on the small council. We already know the trouble with her possibly ascending the throne. To then be lactating and for this lady to point out, oh yeah, you're, you know, when you're extending the olive branch, embarrass you and be like, look, you're dripping through your dress. Really? That's, to me as a guy, like as a person of color, that would be like the equivalent of like another black dude being there and calling me out for my hair, or calling me out for something else culturally specific in a boardroom full of people who don't identify as being a person of color.
Yeah.
And that to me is what I saw her do, which made me lose even more respect on top of her making this woman come out of her bed and bring her child right after childbirth. I think both of those things are just ugly.
Yeah, it was, that part was actually horrifying because it also forced Rhaenyra to sit down. Mm-hmm. She silenced her, right? Mm-hmm. Rhaenyra continued to speak, which I was like, I actually thought for a moment that Rhaenyra was going to like run out of the room, but she didn't. She continued her overtures, but it was just like what a way to signal like you shouldn't respect her because she's a woman.
Yeah,
that's essentially exactly what she was signaling there, but at the same time asking for respect. And that's part of my problem with Allison in this episode. I know I said my rant was over, but she is being hypocritical all throughout. I mean, she even makes that comment, I'm surprised that they're, you know, the dragon eggs have hatched.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's only one kid without a dragon here, and it's yours.
Yeah, and by the way, you're not of Valyrian blood either. So, like, how were you surprised when your kid's dragon eggs were hatching? Like, you're only half of the, you're not a dragon rider traditionally. So get out of here with that.
Yeah, I think there's like a little something going on here with her. She thinks that like, the male line is stronger. And I'm just like, girl, stop buying into the patriarchy's hype. What? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't the dragon eggs hatch? Rhaenyra is still a dragon rider. Like, what are you talking about even?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hope that is the end of my Allison rant.
I also want to say in that scene that I thought Viserys softening that was good, because I think he spoke to Rhaenyra and was like, you know, I think that's a fine offer what you're offering, but I wish that he would take like a stronger position in this conflict, mm-hmm, between Rhaenyra and Allison. I think he's known both of them, like, I know this is weird to say, but he's known both of them since they were a lot younger. Even though one ends up being his wife and one is his daughter, which was odd. He probably shouldn't have made that choice. But now is the time to like okay, enough of this. Like, you're both, let's both, all three of us are sitting down. Everybody get out of this room. We're going to iron this out. Like, period, plain and simple.
Again, the show will make you root for weird things, but I was kind of hoping he just said yes.
Yeah.
Just said yes. Yeah. Okay, it is known. Jace is now betrothed to Helena.
Yeah.
What could Allison have done if he had just said yes? Now, granted, I do think it's important for him to, I don't want to say that it's okay for him not to consult his wife, but like, she's being unreasonable here. And I just, there was something in me that was just kind of like, just agree, bring the houses together, which is super weird because I'm advocating for him to not consult his wife, which is a thing I was really mad at him about in episode one. Mm-hmm. And also for, you know, more incest. But yeah. It was.
I mean, this is going to be a running theme on this show.
Jeez, for sure. He just lets everyone do whatever, because going back to, I think this was what he said in episode three, is that he just like cannot deal with the conflict. He is doomed to upset one person to make another person happy. And I'm like, well, you're the king. You don't have to make anyone happy.
Yeah,
and that's classic, what Damon tried to tell him too. What you say is the law.
Damon has tried to tell him that since the beginning. It's classic people pleasing behavior, and it's led him, it's weakened him over time and time and time again. We'd be remiss not talking about that after Allison is on her high horse about all these things, and she Bogarts her way into a conversation with the Hand of the King, and the King almost doesn't let it happen. And then kind of waits for Lionel Strong, who is, in my opinion, outside of like what I think is the theme of the show, right, of this particular episode, of like, you know, the things that parents don't see, the blindness that parents have in regards to their kids and their children. I think that outside of his blindness around who Laris is, probably to me is one of the strongest players in this, and just understanding how to keep his cards close to the vest. His children really undo some of that for him, both of them. I thought that she goes right from that to Laris. She goes right from him almost resigning, all of the conversation, waiting for him to undo and hurt and wound Rhaenyra, which he refuses. He stops short of doing. To being upset. And I thought some of the commentary here was really strong by Viserys, was that he said, you have been one of my most trusted advisors. You've been like not self-serving, which is far different than anybody else in the
realm. And the camera sharpened on Allison when he said she felt that.
And she has to know that his counsel was against her being married to him. I mean, he did not want them two to get married. Like, he thought that the Hand was overreaching himself. In fact, he's up probably even more so upset about what happens with Rhaenyra and his son, because he shot that down too. So I think that it shows you who she is again a little bit more, because she's in this. Bogart into a meeting, gives her 2 cents, tries to create dissension. When she doesn't go her way, she goes down the hall and goes to the son of the person who she was trying to trick. Let's talk about this son.
So,
man, is this guy a trash can?
So before we talk about him, I just want to know, Viserys does stand his ground once in this episode, and that is when Lionel tries to resign. And he knows that Allison would prefer for Lionel to resign. So I'm going to give him a little bit of, you know, tiny participation trophy for that.
Yeah, I thought it was strong. It was the right choice. I also think that the leap that everyone makes and tries to get us to make, I never make in this episode. I don't automatically make the leap that, because Harwin Strong beat Sir Criston's ass, good on you, that automatically those kids are his kids.
Like, I know.
He could have easily just been offended by the sheer notion that you would besmirch the princess's name,
mm-hmm.
or call into question my honor. And I don't quite get how, when the account of what happened was brought forth, that the court didn't say, this is a knight of the Kingsguard calling into question the princess's honor. This is a problem. He should be dismissed or possibly even imprisoned or possibly put to death. You're tasked with protecting the royal family, and now you're calling her honor into question.
Well, also, you are a murderer, so...
Yeah, openly. So this is twice, though, but this is what I'm saying. He's openly again. So let's say he didn't do the murder. Let's say we let him go on the murder. Like, here it is again to the head of the city watch, in front of the king, in front of the princes, in front of the hand. You are now insinuating that the princess has done something improper. Even if she has, the mere insinuation, if the king is holding a position that she hasn't, should lead to his death.
Yeah.
Or the option to go to the wall.
I mean, if things worked the way that they're supposed to, that's probably what would have happened. I mean, Allison, going back to Allison's conversation with Laris, a couple of things. These two eat together every day, right? That's what we're drawing from this?
Seems like it. That's what we're drawing, that they eat together quite frequently to unpack what the spies are saying that they have.
Yeah, so they've gotten quite close. Mm-hmm. I just think that I don't understand how Allison thought this conversation, what she thought this conversation was going to result in. I mean, I guess you could read it as she's just venting. That's mm-hmm. like the kind way of doing it. I do like that Laris called her out on who she really is when she said, your father can't be impartial in this, you know, like my father or whatever. And he was like, your father can't be impartial either. What are you talking about? And she has to admit she means partial to her.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's another thing I think we lost in this time jump. It's not so much their relationship. I can buy that they just became close over the years. But does she know who she's talking to, what he's capable of? It's not that part is not really clear to me. I don't think that Allison was totally surprised by the fact that Laris murdered his brother and his father, but I don't know that I'm not sure if this is an experience that she should be learning from, like, oh wow, the words that I say really have consequence, which perhaps she should, you know, think through next time she tells her son that Rhaenyra is going to murder them all. Or is, I guess I just don't understand the dynamic here. I guess at the very least, I hope that she would learn from this. Like, my words, my actions have consequence, and quite dire consequences. Two people lost their lives off of a conversation that she had.
More than two. Those are the two key people, but who else, who knows who else died in Harrenhal? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, you, that's true. In addition, like, she knows that Sir Criston is capable of murder, and she's hanging out with him too, inventing to him too. I don't know. Is this plausible deniability? She just is gonna
willful ignorance. It's willful ignorance. She's surrounding herself by murderers and saying that she's taking the high road. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt in the Laris conversation right now. In one sense, not that I personally think that she wanted this to happen. Like, if she could have waved a magic wand when nobody was looking and made it where her dad could come back to court in some kind of way, she would have done it. What she, I don't think, was as aware of is how dangerous a player Laris Strong is, and his willingness to even kill his own family, to be a kinslayer, as they say, and just like get rid of them. And she finds out when he starts going on his soliloquy, when he says, you know, what are children but a weakness, a folly, a futility? Through them you imagine you cheat the great darkness of its victory. You will persist forever in some form or another, as if they would keep you from the dust. But for them, you surrender what you should not. You may know what is the right thing to be done, but love stays the hand. So now he's actually saying you can't let love get in the way of what must be done. What is duty in your mind and your perception to take action, which is a scary proposition. Love is a downfall. Best to make your way through life unencumbered, if you ask me. Now, that would be the moment when I realize I have a dog I can't keep on the chain. Mm-hmm. That if I'm around this person, I need to try to keep them as a friend, but I need to be very cautious with what I say to them, because if I don't keep them as a friend and they become my enemy, it could be me that's burnt down in Harrenhal Hall or some other way. So she's now becoming painfully aware that she's made alliances that aren't on the high and mighty and the up and up and the most pious. And I think she's kind of intuitively known that, but now it's empirically, it's like super duper clear.
Yeah. And she can say that she didn't know he was going to do this, but I also find it interesting, and we don't know this for sure because we haven't seen the next episode, but my guess is that she's not going to snitch on him. She's not going to rat him out, right? Same way she didn't with Sir Crispy. So the fact that she's not only willing to surround herself with these sycophants who are also murderers, but also mm-hmm. willing to keep their secrets is pretty alarming and scary. And I really thought about that when Rhaenyra lands on Dragonstone and yep. who she surrounded herself with. And it's just her family. Like, she just has her family, her household. She, obviously, she allowed Lenore's boyfriend to come, but like, she's not out here like scheming and trying to get people on her side. And maybe she should be. Maybe Allison is playing this better, but it's kind of alarming how Allison is now besties with two murderers. The two people she confided in this episode, aside from her husband, are both murderers.
Yeah, I agree. And it could be argued that Viserys is also a murderer. So let's just say that out there.
So in the interest of time, I did want to note a couple, since we're talking about the fire at Harrenhal, I did want to just note that Larys was kind of like a dark horse in the book for this. Mm-hmm. We didn't know mm-hmm. for sure that it was him. Mushroom actually thought Corlys was behind this because Harwin was Rhaenyra's, boyfriend that she was stepping out on Lenore with. Septon Eustace thought it was Daemon. And the book leans into that. It says, more plausibly, Septon Eustace thinks it's Daemon, who wanted to get rid of Harwin because he was a rival for Daenerys's affection. Maester Mellos accuses Viserys. Wow. Saying that he wanted to, squash the rumors and kill the man who had dishonored Rhaenyra. And then it just says others questioned if it was Larys. And I think what's interesting about this is that the book leans very heavily that Harwin was the target, but the show is telling us that Lionel was the target.
Yeah, I think that is very interesting. I thought about the same thing because it seemed like they were trying to cut down Harwin, but in actuality, it like you said, the show is leaning very heavily into the point was to get the hand removed, from here.
Which makes more sense. I had kind of thought maybe it was Viserys, which would have been like a cool twist, but it only makes sense if it's Viserys if Harwin is a target. So making Lionel the target, it makes it much more interesting to me. And it also just establishes that Larys is a cold-hearted killer and kinslayer.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I also think, as far as what we were saying about the surrounding of who Allison is surrounding herself with and those type of folks, I also think that it answered a question for me, too, about these players, the Kristens, the Laris, the Allison, and I mean Damon works his way a little bit too. It's not for out. You know, I was wondering, well, what is their motivation? Why are they mad? They're mad. It's not that the actions of the person. It's if you're not able to have the one up on someone. Like Laris actually, by saying, "Hey, the queen asked for it. She gets it," has made it now where if she goes and outs him or says that he did something, he's now made it where, well, it was at your command. Mm-hmm. So they all like to have that little piece of something that says, I've got one up on you. And I think some of their resentment around Rhaenyra is she's been able to walk around with everyone looking at her like her shit don't stink because she don't go telling everything that everybody's going on, even though they're like, oh, wait, we know what's going on with her. How come everybody's acting like she's cool? So I think some of the resentment just comes from the fact that she keeps them in the dark about her different movements. They don't know everything about her or her motivations.
Mm-hmm.
I also just wanted to, I think another book difference that I think I want to get, you know, as we start getting close here, that I wanted to talk about is we talked a little bit about Damon and Laena and the relationship between Laena and Rhaenyra. I also wanted to talk about the show really leaning into kind of what I feel I hope they start pivoting more away from, but kind of like a one note of who Damon is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that in the book you get the real sense that Damon, although he married Laena against Viserys's wishes, and then went off to Essos and got away from Westeros, he did love Laena. And it's even depicted in that when she dies, the way that it depicted in the book is that, you know, we talked about the difference. When she dies in the show, she dies by dragon fire, which was, you know, one way to go. In the book, she actually has the baby, but the baby is misshapen and malformed, twisted and malformed is what they say in the book. And then it dies within an hour. And then Laena succumbs to childbed fever. And in knowing that she's about to die or that she's really sick, Damon actually flies to Dragonstone to get a more experienced maester to come and try to help to save her life. And when it's everything's unsuccessful, she does leave her bed and she tries because she's wanting to fly one more time on a dragon. She wants to feel she loved dragon riding so much. She wants to feel what it feels like to die riding on the back of Vhagar, and she collapses on her way to Vhagar. And in that moment, Damon picks her up and takes her back to her bed and actually is so heartbroken that Rhaenyra stays with him and consoles him, but he's like very broken up about it. So this kind of like idea of him walking away from his children and like not consoling them feels very different than the image that I feel is in the book of Damon. And I just feel like the show has to do, I hope they start making moves towards not making Damon so one note.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I totally agree. Something was lost and in their relationship, and I'm not sure. I guess we'll have to see where this season ends up, but I'm not sure why they're leaning so hard into this like cold removed version of Damon.
Yeah. And I mean, I want to say there's some things I can say later that I won't say now because it would spoil the next episodes for you guys. I mean, we haven't seen the next episodes, but it would spoil what I know is in the books. So we'll wait, but I want to come back to that and just put a pin in that because I think like there are some things that directions they could have went in that could have got it closer to that I'll leave out.
Yeah. So I also, yeah. While we're talking about Laena and Damon's relationship, I do think this is a good time to weigh in on what multiple people have reached out to me today about, which is why, like, what's going on with the genetics in this story? And listen, I'm going to start out by saying this. In our world, genetics are a funny thing, and the way that you look mm-hmm. may not correspond with your immediate parents. You may look more like your grandparents. You may look more like a great grandparent. There are genes and recessive genes. That said, I do think the story needs to have some consistency here. So the reason I got some messages, and I also saw this theory out on Reddit, is we know that Lenore and Rhaenyra's children are actually Rhaenyra and Harwin's children. But what's happening with Daemon's kids? Are those his kids? From the book, those are his kids. But I do think that the show has kind of confused things, because I don't quite understand why there's no issue that they look more like their mother. And I would even argue to say they actually don't look a lot like their mother. And no one, it's not noted in the story, like it's not a thing. But then the issue comes up with the Strong / Velaryon kids, which is, and I get it, it's about hair and, you know, eye color and all of that. But I just wish the show was a little clearer on this. I think that it's a little confusing when we've had multiple other characters who based on the story should technically be like, I don't want to say multiracial. These are racial. These are all Velaryon people, but should look more like Corlys and don't.
I got the answer. I know the answer why. I know it. Okay. Because
go for it.
When I was a boy, I had a horse and this horse got betted by this silver horse, and God's be good, the baby came out brown. I don't know.
Chestnut. It was really specific.
Chestnut. The baby came out chestnut. So, you know, just unremarkably chestnut. Which, by the way, chestnut is a fine color. Viserys, what the fuck? No, but I hear what you're saying. I definitely think that there's some, you know, it's, I'm gonna lean on the side of like, they're still figuring this stuff out. I think this is the showrunners wanted Corlys, to be a person of color, and they wanted there to be more people of color in the show. I don't think that, and I think George was in support of that. I don't think that when he was writing it, to be fair to the showrunners, that George necessarily said that that's the direction he was going in. I definitely know the illustrations that were made by people online and in some of the books that, like, you know, on my Kindle, don't look like Corlys Velaryon that we have on the show. So I think what they're attempting to do is diversify the cast. That being said, there has to be, like you said, some consistency and deal with like actual how genetics break down. And there are some people who were Velaryons who were married into Targaryen family earlier than these people. So you have to make some sort of, you have to be able to show how that that went into it. But I'm okay with it, because at the end of the day, we came into this like pro House Targ, like we love House Targ like that. We did in Game of Thrones. And now we get the Velaryons too. So like either way I go, like I'm fine. I'm dope with either one of them.
Yeah,
so
I'm totally fine with, I'm actually fine with all of it, because at the, like, I don't see, I know some people have made comparisons between like the Baratheon children in Game of Thrones, well, you know, Lannister / Baratheon children in Game of Thrones and Rhaenyra's kids. This is like a little bit of a different situation, because Rhaenyra is the heir to the throne and they're definitely her kids as opposed to not. I do think though,
and Cersei was queen consort,
right?
Like, she was not,
well,
yeah,
she exactly. started queen consort,
but then she became the queen of the, yeah,
but exactly. I do think that consort. In a show where they're leaning so far into connecting to the other show, where, you know, there's a whole scene with Ned doing the, you know, Baratheon, black of hair.
Yeah.
and then we have, you know, these two sets of kids who they're, I think they're trying to tell us that that Rhaenyra's children should look like Daemon's children, I understand why people are confused. Because people are like, wait, this isn't how it works in our world. We're confused about how it works in this world. I think that the most important thing to remember is if the this world has racial stratifications, it's like the Rhoynar, the Valyrians, the First Men. It's not skin color based. But I totally am with y'all because I spent more time today trying to like figure out like when did the Valyrians become black? Like that was like a real line of like inquiry for me today. And I was like, wait, what am I even doing here? Like at the end of the day, the issue is that the kids are not don't look Valyrian. So I just wanted to touch on that since we were talking about the differences from the books and like all of in the relationship between Daemon and Lena.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely worth discussing. And I think also in Daemon's whole thing, I guess he never made it out to the Eyrie to get his inheritance. I guess it just didn't happen. Guess he left that on the table. He was kind of like, you know, I don't really miss home.
Yeah, I love. So I was kind of hoping that they would do this scene because this was my favorite scene from Fire and Blood involving Daemon. Was like, he goes back to the Vale and is like, Lady Jane Arryn, my lady wife, Lady Rhea has died. And, you know, I would like to claim Runestone. And she's like, get out. Nah.
Kick rocks. She's like, kick rocks. You get out of here.
Not only are you not getting the rights to Runestone or any title, sir, but you need to leave the Vale immediately.
Immediately.
It's great.
Like, I don't give a fuck about your dragon.
And he actually leaves and doesn't come back, which tells you Lady Jane Arryn is more like has more clout in Daemon's mind than Viserys, who
kicks him out every episode
and he comes back the next episode.
He's like, I grew up with that guy. He's not doing shit. I don't know. I'm kind of on the edge. Also, staying with Daemon, I did want to talk about the offer that's on the table for him. And his family that makes him want to extend their vacation. Like, you know, his wife is like, hey, honey, I want to get home. Like, I want to have my baby on Driftmark. And, you know, there's better prenatal care over there. And, you know, these fucking Targaryen men.
Is there?
I didn't
go on my rant about the childbirth in this, but I'm like, the maesters and whatever this guy is in Pentos, they could learn from, you know, Trixie Franklin on Call the Midwife. She would have delivered these babies. Everybody would have been fine. Mom and baby would have been happy. Like they need to learn. This is
they're giving up on these births way too early. Like it's just like, come on, man. Like you can turn the baby. There's like if she had enough to get up and go and get Dracarys, like there could have been some more action we could have taken. He's like, I've come to the end of my arts. Well then get me another doctor, bro. Exactly. Like I don't know what to do. Like,
can I
like,
get somebody else, please? Like
And the other thing that pissed me off a little bit about that is that I just feel like, the other thing I noticed over in King's Landing, though, is in Rhaenyra's birthing scene, there was no maester in there. It was just it looked like they were just like midwives.
I mean, there is actually some science about this, that midwives oftentimes deliver babies better than doctors. So 100%. I noted that too, although she did tell her father that she, you know, was not
she may
nice.
Call one of them a nice name. She was so nice. So I mean, to be fair, that's probably the worst pain. I've never experienced it, but I can imagine the worst pain.
Gonna be mad at a mother for using curse words and being angry at everybody.
I've been on the receiving end of that, but I've never actually been the one doing the cursing. The other thing I think was important that I wanted to talk about was just the conversation that they're having when they're extending the family vacation over in Pentos. The prince over there in Pentos is a character that's not in the books. They do say that Lena and Daemon were over in Pentos with a Pentoshi prince, but they don't name him. So they do name him in this episode, Prince Reggio. But the pitch is really starts off trying to soften it with like a toast to Aegon the Conqueror. And what he says in the toast is referencing this period called the Century of Blood that's in the book. And the Century of Blood was the time period after the fall of Old Valyria, when, you know, everything, we know that period, but it's before the conquest. And so he's talking about a time when Aegon actually went to Pentos and helped destroy a Valentine fleet in Lys. And he did that for the people in Pentos. So there's like a whole thing that happens before he becomes the Lord of the Seven Kingdoms through Aegon's conquest that he's referencing. And then he offers him that the lordship over there. So it's kind of like, hey, your ancestor did this cool thing for us, like he says in the episode, and you could do the same thing, and you could be like another Aegon the Conqueror. And this is like one of the highest kind of, it's one of the highest compliments it feels like you can tell a Targaryen, is like, you're going to be like Aegon the Conqueror, because they keep naming it children Aegon, so obviously everybody wants to be that. And so for Daemon, it does flatter him, and it does kind of like make him think, well, man, I'm getting respect here in a deep way, because they're comparing what I could do to this thing that happened before the conquest even happened. And he's been reading all these stories, so it just leads you to believe that he's feeling more appreciated there, even in what he says in his conversation with Elena. And I think a lot of that is based on the information that's being spoken about at the table. And I was very highly impressed with the young Targaryen princesses. They found it very amusing that this guy was pitching their wedding, or that their mom was pitching their betrothal. Yeah, they were like out on that. Like Rhaena especially, she was like, what? Like, no, it's like, not happening.
Absolutely not. Not happening.
Absolutely not. Bad enough my dragon head won't hatch. Now you want to give me a dud for a husband? No, it's not happening.
Yeah, I really liked them. Good intro to these new characters for sure. And I'll be honest, like I forgot about the whole like change with Rhaenyra and Allison within seconds. Like this was such a great introduction to Olivia Cooke and Emma Darcy, and I'm excited. This is going to be great. This felt almost like, you know, season 2, episode 1. I've heard some people compare it to like a new pilot, but I thought this was a pretty good rollout. Yes, we nitpicked. There were some things we would have liked to see, but I really enjoyed seeing all the new characters, and they have like their own little personalities, and it's great. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. I think when Helena was talking about the rings on that bug, and she was like, you know, making all those different discussions, do you think she was shading Rings of Power?
No, but I do think that there were some things that were said in that scene that are spoilery and certainly some foreshadowing, but we can't talk about it here.
Yeah.
There's
things that happen
spoiler.
In that scene and other scenes as well. There's actually something that happens on the way up the stairs that I wanted to talk about that I'm also going to hold, because I don't know if the show's going to deal with it. But that's also when Rhaenyra's on her way to the queen. There's a good amount of things that we're not saying until we get there. But we're going to get there, and we're having a great time doing it. What a journey this is so far, because wow,
I know,
so cool.
It's like this Thrones is back. Like this is the show everyone is talking about it constantly. It is exciting to people. There's lots of theory crafting happening. I'm hyped. Like this is exactly what I was hoping but didn't think they could pull off, and I think they've done a really good job so far. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good.
Yep, I agree. So that will do it for us this week. Man, we are having a great time. Please reach out to us, KinFolklorePod on Instagram or Twitter. Hit us up on any other socials. We're getting some people hitting us up inside the Facebook group, so join the Facebook group. And also, you can send us emails at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And we appreciate all you guys listening, everyone listening. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.